Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Hey, welcome in. Time for a daily editorial. We've got a pretty serious editorial today. Jimmy and I have been talking off mic for probably close to 20 minutes. Jim has brought out to me, which I fully understand, basically because he has provided me with the information, showed me how to go in the right direction, which I think a lot of Americans aren't going in right now. I want to say this, what Jim is afraid of, and he is pretty sure it's going to happen, because of the fact that America has really failed in three areas, one being the Middle East, two being the Ukraine, certainly, and he says we're about ready to fail in the third area. And what I would like Jim to do, if so that you guys can understand as clearly as I do what Jim's philosophy is, I'd like him to give the rationale for him saying the following statement to me this morning. We are right around the corner from a shooting war with mainland China, with the rationale behind that being purely and simply that we have had a treaty with Taiwan to protect it for a long, long time. And Jim is convinced that because of China's actions, the war games that are going on in the South China Sea, that we're very, very close to a major conflict, which is obviously going to evolve into a very serious situation for the world. If that happens, and Jim is pretty sure that it will in the very near future, all I can say is, look out, this thing could go as far as Great Britain, Tony. Go ahead, Jimmy, let's hear the rationale.
So what I believe is happening is the same thing that happened and has happened over and over again with Russia and has happened with China in the past. So these countries, they make very clear signaling and very clear communications about their intentions. China has been stating unequivocally in the last 2 years that they want to reintegrate Taiwan under their control.
They've been saying that now, for a long time, you're correct.
And that's absolutely essential for the survival of their basically authoritarian regime if a Chinese-speaking population continues to economically grow, have power, and could potentially spread democratic principles into the mainland and eventually into Beijing, and the centralized control of the Communist Party would be lost. So that is a survival requirement for the CCP, the Communist Chinese,
right.
The party. Now, we've seen very clearly what they have done in Hong Kong since the 1997 handover of authority. And in spite of agreements to allow an autonomous, economically independent, and politically independent Hong Kong, they have successfully silenced any opposition and taken away basically democracy or any thought of it in Hong Kong, and taken control of most of the resources and managing the economic influence there. So again, Hong Kong, because of its political autonomy, was a threat to Beijing as well.
Yeah, it was, of course. And I have to agree with you that this was handled in a very, very effective manner, number one, on the part of the Chinese as of this date. And it was handled in such a way that the Chinese lost absolutely nothing.
That's right. They just gained resources, power, and influence.
Right.
And of course, the relationships with the Hong Kong, very powerful and influential business relationships with the Hong Kong community, banking community, finance community, and trading community, have spread throughout New York, London, Paris, all the financial capitals, and all the trading capitals of the world. So that influence has increased, not decreased because of it.
Yeah.
Now, when we talk about the obligations and the potential for U.S. becoming involved, the United States, after the Communist Chinese took over China, and of course, following the Korean War, the United States had a formal agreement with the Republic of China, the ROC, that is Taiwan, for mutual defense treaty between the United States of America and the Republic of China. Now, we have signed very few mutual defense pacts. There's 5 in Asia and 2 in Europe and throughout our history. And this mutual defense pact obligated the United States to defend the Republic of China, that's Taiwan, up until the Carter administration dropped out of it in 1997 when they – in 1980, basically, when they accepted relations with the Chinese communist-controlled China. So they – basically, we swapped our obligations in some respects. However, the Taiwan Relations Act of 1979 by Congress actually still maintains relationships with Taiwan, with the Republic of China, the ROC, the ROC. And still, we have been incredibly effective in continuing to provide them military capabilities. So with a population of less than 30 million, about 28 million people, but a very powerful economic influence on the island of Taiwan, they do about 70% of the globe's silicon chip, computer chip production. They have tremendous trading relationships around the world. They've done financially very, very well. However, again, that political threat of their existence is forcing Beijing to decide to take action. And they are signaling very clearly their intentions.
Jimmy, stop you for a second. I want to make that point really clear. Jim and I talked about this off mic earlier today. Something that perhaps a lot of Americans are not aware of is the severity of the war games that are going on right now in the area between China and Taiwan. Right now, for example, a major aircraft from America is I'm not quite sure how to say this, but they are. It is. Teeing off, for lack of better terms, with a similar Chinese aircraft carrier. Do you know how serious that is?
I think it's very serious.
Yeah. Jim, would you elaborate on that for me a little bit?
So over the weekend, apparently they launched about 80 aircraft in operations from the single Chinese aircraft carrier. Yeah. Of course, this is one that was, you know, in cooperation with the Russians, and where they bought an old one, then refurbished and have made it quite capable. This is one element of power. But at the same time, the Chinese have been sending dozens, literally dozens of aircraft into the air defense intercept zone, that space between actual sovereign airspace and airspace that you want to protect and be able to operate in. They've been sending dozens of aircraft around Taiwan for a couple of years now. They have done a tremendous job in the last decade of building up bases in the South China Sea on non-existent, basically atolls or even just reefs, where they came in and built islands, actually brought enough material to build islands, built runways, built defense capabilities in order to defend their periphery and expand their influence into the South China Sea, the Yellow Sea, and in and around influence Taiwan.
Jimmy, if I'm not mistaken, that's pretty well common knowledge, at least here in America and certainly in Europe, and has been for the last, I would say, 4 to 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, they've been doing it for about 12 years, and it's really been people have started to understand it. Actually, before that, probably about 15 years, people began to notice it, and there's been quite a bit of reporting on it. And they've got a number of these facilities that are actually built up defensive areas. And of course, initially they said, hey, this is just we're just doing engineering projects. This has nothing to do with military capabilities. But then they built runways, put air defense systems on them, and then expanded influence into the region. And then, of course, that's a threat to the Philippines. It's contested area there. It's the threat to Japan, to Malaysia, Singapore, the Strait of Malacca, the entire region, which, you know, half the world or more trade travels in that region. And of course,
Jimmy, that was big news, just to remind listeners, not that long ago in the press.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, they're signaling very strongly and making very bold statements that they are going to take back Taiwan, that they're going to reintegrate them under its control, and they're going to do it militarily, and they will stand up against the United States if the United States gets involved.
When did that news become common knowledge, Jimmy?
Well, it's actually been going on. You can almost look on a daily basis, if not weekly basis, of very bold and strong statements from not only official offices, but of state-controlled media out of Beijing.
Yeah.
From the United States perspective, we've been focused on domestic ridiculous issues like Bud Light and Dylan Mulvaney, the transgender individual. We've been focusing on these ridiculous domestic arguments over free speech, which should not be an argument. We just should be allowed to do it.
No,
but censorship, control,
argument. All that
has been diverting U.S. attention. And of course, Ukraine has been a tremendous diversion from the real global threat and the real issue that we're facing right now. And mostly because of a very bad set of policies from the Biden administration that have allowed us to lose ground and credibility around the world.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty well-known fact. We pretty much beat that one into the ground for a long time. We feel here at KER Politics that he's really not the man to be president. I made a comment, a number of years ago, probably about 3 years ago, has made me a lot of enemies. I said about 3 years ago to our audience, which is probably over 4 million people, including the radio, that I didn't think that Biden was really the man to be president. I remember I took a lot of heat from a lot of people for saying that. I just said it because, it's a free country. You could say whatever you want. But I would say the same thing very definitely about Joe Biden right now. He is definitely proving to the world, not only to the Americans, but to the world, that he falls into the same category that Trump did, in my opinion, 2 or 3 years ago, that he probably wasn't the man to be president either. I'm really not sure who is. We need a very, very strong leader at this point, and I cannot stress this enough. That's something that Jim and I will be talking about ad nauseum here in the future as we get closer to the election.
Well, I want to make it clear that I don't support war. War is, everybody loses it, and I'm not trying to advocate.
I know you're not, Jim. I know what I've known you for a long time, bud. I know you're not.
What I'm saying is that we are walking ourselves into obligations that we will not be able to get out of, and we are losing influence and power. And I will tell you where you are wrong, in my view, Al. Donald Trump absolutely handled the Chinese phenomenally. He handled North Korea phenomenally. He handled many, many areas, pulled us out of different issues, had no new wars in his time, and rapidly destroyed ISIS after the Obama administration let them grow. So he was very good on these foreign policy issues. He forced NATO members to pay up and pay their responsible dues based on treaty requirements of 2%. Not all of them did, but many of them did. And of course, they now, in spite of the problem being a European problem, they are depending on the United States to fund the Ukraine war, which is an absolute disaster. At the same, because they fear Russia. Whether you would like it or not, they fear Russia's expansion and the potential threat to their border. At the same time, you've got part of the allies in the region, including France and Macron, not siding with the United States. This is because they don't trust the United States anymore.
Right.
People do not trust them. And that's because of failed policies the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, the absolute debacle in the Middle East with the JCPOA, the Iranian nuke deal, the failure on energy policy around the world, and of course, us dragging the rest of the world into inflationary problems and potential global recession, if not depression, because of bad economic policy.
Yeah. The only comment I'm going to make, Jimmy, purely and simply, and you're a friend of mine, you and I think, value each other's opinion. We may not agree, but I'd be more than happy to kind of work my way out of the wilderness here when it comes about my statement regarding Trump, unless you and I do a daily editorial on that in the future. I'm very open-minded, as you know. I'm not nearly as politically knowledgeable as you are. I will say that. I've learned a lot from you since I met you, Jim, probably over 10 years ago. So I'd love to share my opinion with you in terms of a daily editorial. I'm not necessarily set in my ways as a lot of people might think.
Looking back on the Trump... Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I agree. I think we can talk about it again. We've talked about it much. But looking back on what happened in that time frame, with the exception of very disastrous policies under COVID, because nobody understood it. And from my perspective, deep state operatives absolutely manipulated the entire government, you know, the honest people trying to do the right thing. They manipulated them for political ends, which absolutely, since that moment, we have been declining. And of course, that is another thing to mention. You know, Joe Biden finally lifted the emergency order on COVID just yesterday after the House and Senate passed that bill. He wasn't going to do it till the end of May. This was over with a year and a half, 2 years ago. It was over within a few weeks, actually, the emergency, if you really looked at the data. But what they have done is destroyed the influence of the United States for the Democratic policies to get power and to run this country. And they're running it into the ground very rapidly. And if you go back and look at the economic growth under the Trump administration, if you look at the deregulation under the Trump administration, if you look at the policies and take away the personal animosity that was created by politics, you have a very different view, and historians will have a very different view of that time than what we see on the mainstream media news and MSNBC, CNN, and Seattle Times headlines.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, not a bit. What I'm concerned about right now isn't necessarily domestic politics in America. It's a very, very large concern, and it's a hugely important input into the future of the world, in my opinion, particularly with the fact that I would agree that it's about time that China did do what they've been threatening to do for a long time. I'm very concerned right now about the amount of deaths that are going to occur when that happens. I'm very concerned about that. And I think it's going to be a dramatic, dramatic event, negative event. I don't care who's at fault. What I care about purely and simply is that the event probably will happen. And that bothers me a lot.
No, it looks to me like right now the Chinese are looking at a window, and it's been stated by many people, by U.S., you know, if you can trust them at all anymore, U.S. intelligence agencies, by senior military, the Indo-Pacific Command commander, by the Chinese themselves. They've said that they will take back Taiwan before 2027. They have a narrow window to do this under this administration, under the Biden administration, because of the severe weakness that the United States is in internationally right now. And I'm very afraid that they're going to take action. And once that happens, decisions go out of control. But I will tell you, politically, often political leaders like and want war because it diverts attention from the population from their own domestic failures. And that's what I fear more than anything else.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. And I can probably just off the top of my head give numerous examples where that has happened in terms of the United States. But that's not the point of this discussion. The point of this discussion is seriously the future actions of China. Now, let me ask you this.
Well, yeah. Again, I want to say this, Al. The future actions of China are directly related to the U.S. influence and policy and weakness in the world. So, and again, if the administration is weak, they will take an opportunity to push their agenda, the Chinese Communist Party.
So I believe
when they do that, if we fail to have a effective management of the problem, it may rapidly expand. And again, politicians may use the opportunity to get into a war that they, you know, should have never been in the first place.
I don't disagree with that whatsoever. Now, the war you're talking about right now is a shooting war with the CCP, correct?
I'm talking about CCP invading Taiwan and then the ramifications of that to global economics,
right,
to regional powers, to Japan, to Australia, to Malaysia, to Singapore, to the United States, to the Philippines,
right,
and, of course, other big players in the region like India.
Right. Well, I think people have to consider, quite frankly, and consider very strongly exactly not only future actions of China, but let's talk about how India is going to play in this deal. Talk about the military strength of India, if you would, Jim.
So they're nuclear capable. Of course, they have a very large military. Their capability has been focused primarily on against Pakistan,
right?
Kashmir region, the contested areas there. However, they've had some very serious incidents along the Chinese border because they do border China,
right,
up along the mountains area in the Tibetan regions in Nepal. Those up high in the northeast of the nation, and of course, the population of India is getting close to matching, if not surpassing, China. The economic influence of India will continue to grow. Their military capabilities have been focused on, their border dispute issues. However, they are increasing. They are dependent on Russian military. The vast majority of their hardware was purchased from the Russians in the past. They have recently begun buying U.S. equipment.
Yeah.
So basically, the Russian military equipment is proven throughout every single conflict to be inferior.
Yeah.
But the Chinese probably have similar capabilities. I will say this: the Chinese have been spending a massive amount of money to increase very specific capabilities that would help them defeat the United States and the Taiwanese in a war for that island.
Now, Jim, would you say that if you were to look at the powers really that would be contra America in this potential upcoming battle, would you put the main contra areas as Russia, China, and India? Is that correct?
Yes, and of course, there's always the potential for North Korea, and then you still have Middle Eastern problems, severe Middle Eastern problems. But bottom line, everywhere is right now in flames because when there's no effective leadership, there's a vacuum. Chaos fills the vacuum. What we're seeing now in Ukraine with Russia was chaos because of a vacuum of leadership in both NATO and because of the U.S. withdrawal of Afghanistan, where the United States was basically in such a weak position.
Right.
What you're seeing with Taiwan is the Australians, the Japanese, the French, all wondering about, oh my gosh, would the U.S. be able to actually help defend us? Though we have official treaty obligations with those nations, would they even stand up? Could we trust them? Because, boy, they really failed in Afghanistan, and they failed in Iraq, and they failed so miserably over the last two decades.
Yeah.
But more importantly, the decisions being made right now with the number one priority of the Biden administration being climate change, and number two being diversity, equity, inclusion.
Jimmy, don't make me an idiot, okay? What the hell does climate change have to do with a potential major nuclear world war?
Well, the only thing it does, it diverts U.S. attention and economic power. It's undermining U.S. economic independence and power by moving towards climate change. And the diversity, equity, inclusion is actually getting senior people that are incompetent in charge of our government.
Yeah, I guess I knew you were going to say that, and I wanted to kind of squeeze it out of you so people really understand the total picture that makes up Jim McKinney. I don't disagree with that, Jimmy. The concept of diversion has been going on for a long, long time. Most of the people in America right now aren't thinking about the diversion whatsoever, Jim, and that's kind of too bad. Let's see if this comes out the way you think it will. I think there's a good chance, quite frankly, that it could.
Well, I very much fear it, and I think it has a lot to do with social media manipulation,
yeah,
being controlled actually by corporations that really, really support Chinese propaganda,
right?
By our media, which is very supportive of a progressive agenda and not looking at the long-term security interests of either the world or our nation. And they are completely absorbed with stupid policy, and they aren't smart enough to even, many of our media leaders are not smart enough to even ask the questions, but
well,
many of our editors.
I happen to agree with that. And I really do. And I think you've made your point very succinctly, quite frankly, even though we've been talking for 26, 27 minutes. I guess the only thing I can say is get out a bottle of Crown Royal and watch your favorite news stations almost on a daily basis. I'm betting on Jimmy being correct.
Well, let's see what happens. I pray that it does not turn out this way, but it looks pretty clear that we are marching rapidly towards global conflict.
What a bummer. Something for an almost 82-year-old man to have to look forward to. Let's get some opinions on this. I happen to agree with Jimmy on this one. I'm not sure about the time frame. That's the only thing that I'm really not sure about. Jimmy, tell me once more, how immediate do you think this event could be?
I think they need to do it before a change in leadership in the United States executive branch. So before the end of the 2024 election cycle.
Okay, there you go. You've had it. You know all about Jim McKinney. I put a short profile about him on our KER Politics page. I know that the guy knows what he's talking about. I pray to God that he's not correct, but let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And he
and
he probably does too, so let's see what happens. Thanks much, Jim.
You bet, Alan.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics. We will be back in a moment.